Welcome to Radio Entrepreneurs. My name is Rich Hershen. I'm here with Kelly Berardi today, broadcasting from Gray, Grand Gray, the public accounting firm located in Canton, Massachusetts. Today we have as our guest the very nicely dressed Derek Rawls, who's a tax director at Gray, Grand Gray. Welcome to the show, Derek.
Well, I'm happy to be here again. It's been a little while.
Did anyone tell you this was radio, not TV? I noticed you're looking very nice today.
Very dapper today.
Yes, I found that a lot of people have informed me that when you're on radio, you don't need to dress up. You could wear your pajamas. People aren't really going to see you, but I thought I might want to look nice for this. It's a big occasion.
Yeah, it is. We're glad you look so nice.
Yeah.
So you are a SALT expert. You want to explain to people what a SALT expert is?
Yes. So within the tax area, I focus on state and local taxes. And that's the acronym that we use. And I've been doing it for over 25 years now. So it's my specialty and what I focus on to help our clients.
Great.
So Derek, will you talk a little bit about what's going on in state and local taxation and what that sort of means to clients or your clients?
Yeah, I think the biggest issue for the states now is that they need to raise revenue to support all the state programs that they have to fund. So they're really trying to strike a balance between taxing individuals and businesses and also promoting economic development. You may have seen something recently in the news here in Massachusetts with a company that relocated its headquarters to Mass in GE. And what Massachusetts did there was they offered GE a tremendous amount of tax breaks to encourage them to locate their headquarters in Massachusetts. And it's somewhat controversial because, you know, the state is giving up tax dollars in providing these incentives, but they're hopeful that the GE investment and the relocation of the headquarters is going to spur enough economic development to more than pay back those lost taxes through those programs.
Yeah, I would imagine the states look at it as a business analysis. So yeah, we're paying in some respects to have GE come here, but look what they're going to bring and what they're going to do and all the jobs they're going to provide and housing and everything else that goes along with it.
Absolutely. And in striking that balance, it creates a lot of complexity because there's a variety of taxes that the states are levying to raise the funds, but then they're offering other incentives and other opportunities. And one of the things that I do is I try to help business navigate through those to make sure they're mitigating their risks, paying the taxes they owe, but also taking advantage of any opportunities that the state is offering to attract them and retain them in the state.
So have you ever dealt with companies that are being lured by other states and seeing what some of the incentives and things like that were offered?
Yes, it's always great advice to tell businesses not to commit right away and to have a lot of different options in play. To talk to the various economic development departments within the states to see where they can get the best deal, and then pairing that up with what makes sense from a business standpoint to see what works out the best.
So what are some of the hot areas that you're seeing with the clients you work with?
The biggest challenge it really comes from the fact that many of the state tax laws were developed back in the 60s and 70s, and now the economy has changed so much that there's a lot of challenges in applying these old laws to the new business models that we see. For example, online sales is a big area with respect to sales tax. There is a rule that a business does not have to collect and remit sales tax unless they have a physical presence in a state. And when we have businesses selling online, they don't have to have a physical presence in a state to sell their product. So the states are very frustrated by this because they're not able to collect oftentimes sales tax on those sales.
And it certainly puts the local merchant at a disadvantage. So I mean, right away in Massachusetts, they're, you know, 6.25% higher than their online competitor.
That's absolutely true. And that came about very early on with online sales in the book industry, you know. Mm-hmm. And so what the states have done is they've really tried hard to find any possible way to attribute a physical presence to a business. So they have this concept of click-through nexus, where if the online seller hires a third party that has a physical presence in a particular state to put up a click-through button on their site to get to the retailer, they would attribute that physical presence of the third party to the business and impose sales tax on them. And that,
I think clients also get very frustrated as well, just trying to navigate the rules, right? Because it's very sales tax nexus versus, you know, income tax nexus is very different, right? So you may have some clients that think they have a very simple business model, and yet they're filing either income tax or sales tax returns in, you know, 30, 40 states.
Right. It's a very difficult thing to balance. And oftentimes we just run the numbers to see, you know, what are your big states? Where are your material sales? To make sure that they're really focused on the big dollars and getting 80 to 90% of it right, and then deciding whether or not they want to live with some risk with some smaller exposure states.
Right.
But that's a great point.
So do you see things changing significantly with the online retail, online commerce, you know, getting so big and so popular? I mean, at some point, the states are just going to have to change the model. Somehow, I would think, in order to keep pace with that. Do you see that in the future, of just a total overhaul of the way the system works?
Yeah, there's some tension there, because the states either would like this the states would like the sellers to report who's buying goods in the state, so that they can compel the buyer to self-assess use tax, or they would like to impose their tax on all businesses, but pursuant to the Constitution, there is restrictions, and there needs to be a sufficient connection between the business and the state in order for them to be able to tax them. Mm-hmm. So I think this is going to end up in the courts at some point, but it has not been a fast process. Hmm. And each state has tried to do different things, so there's not a lot of uniformity there as well.
Do you see any uniformity coming just among all the states? I mean, I know, you know, every state seems to have different rules, which makes it frustrating for business owners, because, you know, they're following 50 different rules. Do you see any changes on the horizon in, you know, some way to simplify the state tax compliance?
It would be nice. It would be really great.
Probably wouldn't be good for your business.
Right? It would not. I mean, if for sales tax, for example, if everybody could just pay in or collect sales tax and send it to a central source that would distribute it out to the states, that would be a great idea. But going back to my initial point, the states are so unique because they want to be different. They want to have more favorable laws, or they want to do something a little bit differently to attract businesses. So they're not really trying to be the same. They're trying to be a little bit more creative, to raise revenue in different ways, mm-hmm. and also to attract businesses. So it really creates more of a divide than it does uniformity.
So what do you see are some of the biggest risks for businesses that you work with?
I really think the theme, again, going back to it, is in the area of sales tax. It is something that is often missed. And what happens is a business is making purchases, and sometimes the vendor is not required to charge them sales tax, because that vendor, like we said before, does not have a physical presence in the state. And the businesses aren't going in and reviewing those invoices to see if sales tax has been charged, to see if they have to self-assess a use tax on that purchase. Mm-hmm. Other times, the businesses aren't even keeping their invoices. So when they get audited, they can't prove that they have paid the sales tax that has been owed. So that's a big area. And then on the sales side, when they're selling products or services to their customers, they have to understand whether or not they have a collection responsibility, and whether or not their product or service is taxable. And one of the most unfortunate things that we see is that an entrepreneur has built a business over the years, they've been very successful, and they're getting ready to exit. And they found a buyer for their business, and the buyer hires an advisor to go in and evaluate whether or not there are any tax exposures within the business. And sales tax is a big area of exposure. And if they find that there's significant amount of exposure, they could reduce the purchase price, or the deal could not go through at all.
Hmm. Yeah, we had a similar situation with a client of ours that we thought it was a slam dunk and there were no issues. And one of the things that they were looking for was the initial manufacturing status application, and nobody could find it. Right. And so eventually the deal ended up going through, but they had to keep about $2.5 million in escrow because they were concerned that the states could come back and assess the tax because they took credits that they weren't really eligible for.
Right.
So do you find that that's happening more and more in terms of due diligence, the amount of emphasis that's put on state and local tax versus federal tax?
Absolutely. And a lot of the buyers will bring in a specialist like myself to look at those areas and really dig in particular with sales tax, because if you're taking your revenue times a rate of 6 to 9% each year and you have gaps in your sales tax compliance, those numbers get large very, very quickly.
Right, particularly if you haven't filed, right, because there's no statute of limitations on that stuff that's never been filed.
That's right.
Yeah.
And what makes the issue even more difficult is when you get into areas like software, it's less clear, whether or not your service or your product that you're selling, your software, is taxable. Because the premise of sales tax is that it's imposed on the sale of tangible personal property and certain enumerated services. But is software tangible property? Mm-hmm. Does it depend on whether you sell it in the form of a disk, or whether it's downloaded online, or whether it's pre-written or custom? Oftentimes, those rules are very complicated.
Yeah, certainly complicated areas. And as commerce changes and new products come out, technology keeps moving forward, I'm sure there'll be a lot more changes to come. So, Derek, if a business needs to get in touch with you looking for some state and local tax advice, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
The best way is to email me at Greg Rangray. It's drawls, R-A-W-L-S, at gggcpas.com.
Great. Thanks for joining us, Derek. This is Radio Entrepreneurs, broadcasting from Greg Rangray.